This evening we have Carl Scrady from Capel University, Paul Tilquist, an associate dean at Gustavus Adolphus. Carl is on the faculty. Paul is a visitor in the village this week, and Walt Bowman from Capel Seminary providing the initial few minutes of comments and queries. It's obvious, I think, to all of us who have some familiarity with the Church College that the future is still an uncertain one. I suppose it always has had an uncertain future to some degree, but at this point of declining population of the traditional high school graduates, the almost intolerable costs, the firm establishment of public education on a wide basis in the form of community colleges and expanding state universities, there's a real question of the advisability of the church continuing to support higher education in the form of liberal arts colleges. And yet strong recruitment keeps enrollment up. I understand that St. Olaf had to close down its applications of way last winter, Augustana and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, another ALC school, has record enrollments the last few years. They seem to be affordable by many people, church people. And the tradition and quality and size of the schools continue to have wide appeal, and so there are reasons like this for also acknowledging our continuing support of them. It seems to be helpful, though, to ask what sort of college we ought to be supporting and encouraging. Simply to support a small college hardly seems justifiable at a time when there are plenty of small colleges, many of whom have much greater endowments and financial security and richer traditions, perhaps, than those of the churches. To say that it's a training center for pastors and church school teachers doesn't seem to be quite so convincing as it did in the past, when nearly all of our clergy attended one of all the many church-related colleges. That's not quite so much the case anymore, and many state schools are providing opportunities for training in these areas. Some would argue that it should continue to be the comfort station for worried parents of children who are wary of enrolling in Ohio State with the increasing, threatening reputation of their athletic department and so on. And that, this is an opportunity to provide a kind of way station for them into life. And yet it seems to me that the area or local community college provides an opportunity for that for more people today than was in the past. And so that's maybe not a very convincing reason, even apart from the wisdom of that particular rationale for supporting the church college. One could argue that, of course, simply the community that shares, at least by and large, a common faith is reason enough. And that otherwise, if the church college is the same as any other small college, that's fine, as long as we have faculty and students and administrators who are committed to the gospel. And yet one could argue also that the active presence of the church at state universities is sometimes even more exciting and lively on a secular campus, so to speak, than on a church-related campus. And that the parishes close to public education, institutions of public education, are in that respect perhaps more exciting and challenged. I'm sure there are other reasons one could cite. One could suggest, particularly perhaps, that the church college could provide a radical alternative to other small colleges in the area of the liberal arts, in educating the whole person, which few colleges maybe succeed in doing anymore. And yet, as a faculty member of one of the ALC schools, I question whether we as faculty are really prepared to do that. Our training tends to be still too specialized, maybe, for educating the whole person. As a radical alternative, it ought to be affordable to the church, to the members of our congregations, and yet, simply in order to preserve the kind of cultural diversity, racial diversity, economic diversity, and so on, and yet inflation seems to be just really making that exceedingly difficult, and I understand many of the private schools in the state of Washington have simply given up, and they're recruiting only those from the upper middle class. I don't know how accurate that is, but anyhow, there are rumblings in that direction. One could argue that this radical alternative could be a commitment to the rigorous examination of values from the Christian context of our culture, in order to serve as a kind of prophetic role for our nation. And yet there it seems to me that often our church colleges tend to be a bit conservative. If the church college could provide models for alternative ways of living in the future, again, one could argue that the church colleges tend to be less risky maybe than some other institutions, less willing to risk, and more inclined toward its rich tradition. Well, these are the things at least that come to my mind when we talk about the distinctive role of the church college, and I think it's a significant question, and one that seems to me has implications that go far beyond simply the future of a Concordia, of a Texas Lutheran, of a Valparaiso. With that as a kind of background, we'll begin with Carl Scrady's comments on the situation.
How many people in the room have attended a church college or are in attendance? Can I just see a show of hands?
Are you limiting the religion?
No. Okay.
90%.
Well, one time before a class started, before time for starting a regular class session, I was kicking around with the group in the room and asking things like, why did you come to Capitol? And one of the students answered and said, so I won't get mugged. Which was happening with some regularity at State across town at the time. And he was partly kidding and partly not. I would think, though, that there must be better reasons than that for having church colleges and more things that one might expect out of them. So that's kind of, you know, a beginning point, so I don't get mugged. But I think there are other reasons that are sometimes given. I'd like to go down through discussing some and pointing towards those that I think are most viable. As we talk about the purpose of the church college at Capitol, one of the tasks of the church college, one of the things that's argued as a task for the church college, is academic excellence. And I'm almost as uncomfortable with that as I am with not getting mugged. All schools, at least in theory, stand for academic excellence. And I haven't known any that came out forthrightly against it. So that really doesn't get to the heart of the matter. Well, skipping down a ways, it seems to me like the Christian understanding of identity, the gospel, a theology of grace, should stand at the heart of everything a church college does. That seems to me to be the central reason for the existence of a church college. I think that when a student goes through a church college, there should be certain definite questions that he should face, and a parent or a student going to a church college should expect to face those, to deal with them. I think the time of indoctrination, when a person coming out of a church college could be assumed then to be indoctrinated with a particular set of values, is simply no longer possible, and I doubt it was ever desirable. But I think certain kinds of questions concerning identity, the relation of identity and vocation, and the centrality of the Christian proclamation in dealing with both identity and vocation should always be kept to the fore. So the Christian proclamation of grace, gospel, I think this should be central. But there you have to get into, I think, talking a little further. whose proclamation, whose understanding of the Christian character? And when you were talking, you alluded to this problem. Bishop Ferdy has a neat phrase. He teaches at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, and he says it's something like this. The question is, did Christ die ahead of us or instead of us? Did Christ die ahead of us or instead of us? I think very often the Church College has, for perhaps both parents sending children to the Church College and for the way the college functioned itself, really built out of the idea that, or on the idea that Christ died simply instead of us. And that the role of the Church College was to plug a student into a secure system of morality, a stable set of beliefs, and following that morality and those beliefs, all my questions were answered. And it was simply a matter of maintaining. The Church College is sort of a bastion, a fortress, against the inroads from outside. I don't know how prevalent that is anymore, but I know that oftentimes the child has come, or the student has come to the Church College, and the parent has sent a child to the Church College simply feeling that it was a safe place to be. The correct morals and the correct set of beliefs would be encountered there, and nothing else. I think that's a kind of understanding of Church Colleges built on the idea that Christ died instead of us. We simply plug in. I've heard Walt talk about this some in a different connection. I've heard you talk about what goes on in television as a kind of ritual of resurrection without crucifixion. The sort of thing Bonhoeffer talks about when he talks about cheap grace. Well, I don't think a gospel that is kind of a retreat from the world and gives a safe formula, it's a panacea for all the problems, really is viable. I don't think that's what Church Colleges really should be about. Rather, if a Church College is about a resurrection that calls also for a crucifixion, if it calls for us to take up dying and rising with Christ instead of simply plugging into what he did, then I think that education has to be understood in quite a different fashion. One of the central kinds of theology, or one of the central labels for theology in Lutheran circles, is a theology of the cross. A theology of the cross as central for doing education, I think, calls for a kind of dying and rising, a sorting out of what we're saying no to and what we're trying to say yes to in the culture about us. This means, I think, that there has to be some kind of airing of a clash between the theology of the cross and the mainstream values of Middle America. I personally don't think they can be compatible. This leads into some problems. As we talk about how we should do education at Capital, for example, one of the stock phrases is that the Church College should be about serving the community, serving the society. And some people understand that this way. A person wants a particular vocation. It doesn't make much difference what the vocation is, but the Church College should be about serving that student and the community by providing them with that education. Well, I don't think that makes it. I don't think a Church College can really survive on that basis. For example, if I'm interested in going into business and I simply want some tools for going into business, why not go to Franklin, which is very inexpensive, I guess, city college at this time? Why not go to Ohio State? They offer a wider variety of classes. And they don't, I don't think, offer some of the troublesome questions that should come out of relating the gospel to the world. I think that we should offer vocational possibilities, or vocational pursuits should be central for a Church College. But to serve, I think, means not to serve the vocational interests of the student primarily, or what the community feels to be its vocational needs, but rather to serve, I think, means to serve the gospel, to stand for a particular understanding of what a meaningful identity is, anchored in this business of dying and rising with Christ. A dying with Christ that means a saying no to many of our cultural values, and a rising with Christ, which involves in a risking, a daring to try to live out the gospel in a world which is not particularly compatible with that gospel. So a challenge to the culture, not an accommodation. Serving culture by setting before it law and gospel, not simply by giving a person vocational tools without any question. So that's one thing, I think, one of the things I think a church college should be about, a theology of the cross that will necessitate challenging many of the mainstream cultural values. Another point, I think that there's a natural affinity between liberal arts and the church and the task of the church college. I also think that would be simply good business. As I look around Ohio, for example, schools like Denison, with a strong liberal arts tradition, are among the stronger and more stable financially. That's, you know, one important reason. If we're going to be there, we need to survive financially. But I also think that it's the freedom that we should have under Christ that should give us the openness to go into the liberal arts in the most wide open fashion. The student at the church college should, under the gospel, feel free to entertain all sorts of ideas. So not an indoctrination with a particular set of ideas, but a broad opening up to our liberal arts traditions going way back into the earliest history of education. Another point, I think that the academic study of theology needs a very central role in the church college. I don't think that one learns of Christianity by osmosis. I think that kind of thinking develops where Christianity is understood simply as another system of morality, basically compatible with mainstream middle American cultural morality. But instead, I think there is a long and complex history of Christian theology, and I think that we should deal with it directly and carefully on an academic level. So, however burdensome things like chapel and required religion courses might be, it's my own opinion that nonetheless they're necessary. I don't think it can happen any other way than through the systematic study of theology that a student can come to grips with the real content on an educational academic level of the Christian history. Related to that, I think there needs to be dialogue between disciplines. I don't think theology at a church college should be done in isolation, but rather I think there needs to be constant give and take between the study of religion and other disciplines. For example, at Capital at this time, we're in the business of doing a lot of rethinking on the core courses, curriculum, calendar, the whole thing. And one of the things that I think is really interesting and exciting possibility, I think that it's necessary to have some kind of introductory religion course where you're dealing with basic tools, really, for the study of religion. But for a second religion course, we're about the business of at least talking about, perhaps creating, a number of kinds of courses like this, where a student will have the possibility of taking a second religion course where there will be dialogue between his major and the study of theology. For example, during interim, Carl Sievert, a chemist, and I did a course in science and religion. And we were feeling our way through it, but I think there's really a need to develop a course like that, with the idea that a student graduating with a major in the natural sciences would have at least the opportunity to take a course in religion and science, where there's building on the intro course and a systematic feeling through some key issues in the relationship between science and religion. Or another course I've been involved in working with, we have a large nursing department at Capital, a large school of nursing. To create a course where there's something with the title something like this, Nursing and Religion, where we're doing dialogue between the kinds of problems and ideas the students are learning in the area of nursing and trying to hook that up with the traditions of our theology, for example, a theology of the cross. So when I say I think there needs to be a central role for the academic study of religion, I'd say also at the same time, I don't think that should be done in isolation. I think there needs to be both formally and informally a constant dialogue between the study of religion and other disciplines. Just a couple other comments. I think there needs to be an emphasis on affective teaching, not simply passing on of information. And affective teaching, I think, should be a central task then of the church college. I don't think vocational interests should be set aside, but I think who am I is more important than what am I going to do. And it seems to me that the church college has a unique possibility to deal with that question, who am I, in the light then of our Christian traditions. Couple of final points. The role of the constituency for the colleges, the church colleges, cannot be overemphasized. If there develops any kind of separation between our Lutheran churches and our Lutheran colleges, as has happened, for example, to a large degree in with many of the congregational colleges, then I think the church college is lost. I think the church has one ministry, and it's carried on in the parish and in the college. Any kind of separation there, I think, will finally doom the church college. There are many practical things that you can do as people out in the congregations. Foster programs to give your young people an understanding of what a church college is about. Work for state grants for education. At Capital, we do education a lot less expensively than they do at Ohio State. The difference is made up by our tax money that goes into supporting the state institutions, and it also goes into you people paying a higher fee for your kids going to a church college, and it comes out of my pocketbook by taking a lower salary than the same rank would receive at a church college. But I think that's worth that, you know. But it'll happen only as we consciously recognize that and work towards maintaining our church schools.
I'm struck by that last comment because that's one of the points that the Minnesota private colleges have made with the state legislature for a number of years, and that is that we can educate less expensively than the state can. And as a result, millions of dollars have flowed into the private colleges in Minnesota in the form of scholarships and loans for its students. But that's something that none of us should ever forget as we look at competing tax dollars. I'm interested in looking just a little bit at the history of some of our church colleges for just a minute or so. I'm struck by the title, Church-Related Higher Education. The old main building at Gustavus has at the top of it, I think, the Swedish Evangelical Lutheran Church, and I've got to believe that when the sons and daughters of Swedish immigrants went to Gustavus 100 years ago, that they said that they were going to their college, and they certainly knew that it was their Lutheran school, and I've got to believe that at some time or another in history people referred to it as the Lutheran school. When I went there, we called it our church college, and in recent years, after having had a great amount of dialogue in a rarefied atmosphere of office buildings and Minneapolis and Madison Avenue in New York, we now come out with church-related higher education. And I think that's a very significant thing that we must not lose sight of, that we are, to a certain extent, backing away from that very close tie that the church has had with its educational institutions. We must not forget that. And I see it reflected in our very title, and I'm concerned about that. You have to understand the perspective from which I speak, coming from Minnesota, where of the five Lutheran schools that are found in the state, well, actually six Lutheran schools that are found in the state of Minnesota, all of those six schools are alive and well. All of them are receiving large amounts of support from their church constituents. This is not true throughout all of the LCA colleges. When we get to the East Coast, the relationship between some of the colleges of the church in Pennsylvania and in New York is radically different from the relationship that the church has to its colleges in the Midwest. And it's true with St. Olaf and with Concordia and with Gustavus Adolphus and with Augsburg, and I think to a certain extent with Concordia and St. Paul, although I'm not as well acquainted with Concordia St. Paul as I am with the other four. And the sixth school is a Wisconsin Synod school, Dr. Martin Luther College, which also has a very close tie with the church. I've come at the whole issue of church-related higher education with three assumptions in mind. First of all, that the church college, and I'll choose to call it the church college for tonight's discussion, it has a distinctive role, and I hope we can talk about that a little bit. Secondly, that the church relatedness is important, that it is important to have an affirmation of Christian beliefs, that it is important to have a theology, that it must be present in word as well as in action. And I think, Carl, you've spoken to that very eloquently. And my third assumption is that the academic viability must be present or it fails in its mission. In other words, our church colleges have got to be good. Otherwise, no one is going to want to go there. What should our church-related colleges be doing? You touched on this a little bit, Carl, and I'll reinforce it a little bit. First and most importantly, the ministry of the word and sacrament must be present. And as I begin looking at more of our church colleges, I'm amazed to find that not all of them, in fact, I would say that not the majority of our church colleges even have a morning chapel service. Again, I think with our Minnesota schools, morning chapel is expected on our campuses. But as we move out into some of the other church colleges, morning chapel isn't the norm. There may be some sort of a convocation once a week that may not even have a sermon. The gospel may not be preached. The lessons may not be read. I think it's extremely important that there be a ministry of word and sacrament on a regular basis on our church college campuses. Carl talked to a certain extent about the infusion of Christian teachings into all aspects of curriculum. There are a number of distinctive programs that have come up in our church colleges. Peace Education, the Nobel Conference at Gustavus, St. Olaf has a school of religion. I think we should look at such things as ethics and management, ethics and medicine, stewardship and science, and so forth. And I agree 100% with you that we have to look at more of the affective domains of, or the affective dimensions of teaching. Where does a church college fail, or where has it failed? And I'd just like to throw out a few of these that came to mind as I was thinking about this last night. First of all, I think it fails there's a failure in not adhering to the purpose, to the mission of the church, that we are too prone as a college to sacrifice all in order to gain a few federal dollars. In some way or another, we're going to have to learn to stand on our own and see if we cannot divorce ourselves from federal funding as much as possible. I think we are going to be dependent on federal dollars for scholarship help and for loans to our students. But I find more and more in our church colleges that as we succumb to the temptation to increase the amount of federal funding, we begin to lose our autonomy as a church college, and it's a real danger signal for all of us. And all of it's just temporary too, because as I read in one of the regional newspapers over in the library that now HEW is going to withdraw from federal support for higher education, and I don't remember in what dimension, but that's to be expected. We write federal grants every year at Gustavus, as do all of the church colleges, and we get a few dollars in that last for a couple of years, and then the program is gone. So they're very short-lived sorts of programs, and somewhere or another we're going to have to get away from that. Secondly, we lose sight of the importance of faculty and staff who actively participate in Christian dialogue. One of the toughest problems that we face in recruiting faculty is that coming up with more faculty who want to work at our school who say that they are sympathetic to the teachings of Christ, that they are sympathetic to the aims of the church college. And I'm suggesting as an administrator that that ain't good enough. We've got to have people who are more than just sympathetic to the Christian teachings. They've got to be active members of a Christian church. And I guess I'd even be willing to say that for our Lutheran schools, it's even better off they're Lutherans. Thirdly, that we have lost sight of the importance of word and sacrament. I think I've mentioned that. Fourthly, that the curriculum has lost touch with the important with the importance of critical questions dealing with relationship of people, human relationships, peace education, and others in favor of just pure disciplinary approaches. You know, it's so nice, I think, to deal with some of our disciplines in the purest sense and not look at how those disciplines impact on other people. What happens when we deal in the rarefied atmosphere of pure science and don't look at what happens when our new technology impacts on other people? Fifthly, we've certainly had a failure to communicate with our constituents. We have been too ivory towerish. The LCA schools developed a study with the cooperation of Mertz Strumman in Minneapolis, a survey of the images and expectations of the church colleges and universities. It was a 1975 study, and we are just now beginning to unwrap some of the results of that study. But one of the biggest things that the study has demonstrated to us is that our constituents, those of you who are sitting out there who are graduates of church colleges, alumni, parents, board members, members of our churches, just don't know what is going on the church college campuses. And I think that's a terrible indictment and something that we are going to have to get in touch with if our church colleges are going to succeed. Lastly, we have failed to maintain our distinctive role, and I think most of everything that I've spoken to up until this point may give us some reasons for why we have failed to maintain that distinctive role. Some of the questions that I have for those of you who are here tonight is, how do you respond to some of the things that all of us are presenting to you? Are you at all interested in having a college of the church? When was the last time you visited the campus, or do you only go to the campus when there is a graduation? Or do you only attend the Christmas festival concerts? How much do you really know of what is taught on the college campus? And lastly, how will you, if you are interested in having a college of the church, how will you choose to support it? And that's a question that is being thrown back to all of the church constituents now by many of the colleges as they are seeking alternative source of dollars. How are you willing to support church education or your church colleges?
Well, Walt, can you throw a couple of wrenches in the works just to
tie it all together?
Stir it up here as we open it wider.
I have two sons who are going to Valparaiso this fall, and I just got the bill. And it is hefty, although I agree that church colleges can do their educating for less money. But I wanted to start by asking where the money comes from, because that's a crucial question. It comes from parents, comes from me, and it comes from alumni. And my guess is that most parents are paying college costs as an investment. That is, we want to get something for it. And what most of us want to get is marketable skills for our youngsters who go there so that they aren't a perpetual drain on the family budget. The result is that colleges have to pay attention. I am the customer. I really am. You know, I buy from you guys, all right? And so you have to sell something that I want to buy. And my guess is, again, that most people who buy from the college want marketable vocational activities that their college-educated children can participate in. And I think colleges respond. The other place, that is, they respond by saying, your son or daughter will be employable when they graduate from college. And I think that begins to skew the whole enterprise. The second place that colleges get money from, and we all know this, is from supporters of the school, because the private college cannot charge parents everything that it costs them to educate. I don't know what the actual figures are, but it's something like we pay about a third of the of the total cost. And the rest has to come from endowments and other sources. And those other sources are largely likely to be alumni. And that, too, colors what the church college does. Because most alumni are willing to support a memory and not a vision. Give to good old Siwash. Remember how it was, you know, when we went there. And rah, rah, rah for dear old whatever. And you know, maybe our kids will go there and study from old Prof. So-and-so. Really, that is the sentimental appeal. That is the fundraising appeal to most alumni. I don't know how many of you are alumni, but isn't that really the way it goes? Or the other thing that the school looks for when it goes looking for financial support outside of its the parents who are buying the service is they are looking for alumni who are going to go into the professions that produce fat cats. Which is why church-related colleges have lusted mightily after business schools, for one thing. I mean, you're not going to get to be president of General Motors by graduating from the Honors College of St. Olaf. Para College. So we set up schools of business because we got to have businessmen who are alumni. Or law schools. We'd love it if we could set up medical schools, because that's where a lot of alumni money is likely to come from too. In other words, because we have to stay alive financially, we have to produce things that parents will buy and students, and we got to produce programs that will graduate financially, potentially financially successful alumni who will in turn replenish the coffers of dear old Siwash. There is little direct church money going to most church colleges today. I suspect, I don't know what it's like, but at Valparaiso it right now amounts to about maybe 1% of the total annual operating budget of that school comes directly from churches who are, in a sense, disinterested givers. That is, they have neither students they're supporting, nor are the alumni who are responding to the sentimental appeal. I think that churches are probably getting a lot more from the college than they are giving to it. Now, I don't know where all of this leads, but it does, you know, not very many people are going to buy your vision. They just aren't. The money isn't there for it. Your salary is going to get lower and lower, and we will find out how much you are willing to sacrifice for that vision, Charles Grady.
It's not going to soar.
Well, I mean, the potential is there, all right? So I guess all I really want to say is that the economics of it makes a lot of talk about the vision irrelevant, and that saddens me very, very much. Because I think that let me just throw out a couple of other things. One of the reasons why the church got into the business of higher education in the first place is because there wasn't much available when they started. One of the things we keep saying all the time is that the church as church really ought to keep doing pioneer kinds of things. It ought to look around, see what isn't being done, do it until it gets to being done, and then get out and get into something else. And we're always told that hospitals, Christian hospitals, began when there weren't any hospitals and when nobody cared about the sick. So we got into it, now everybody is caring about the sick, and the churches ought to get out of the hospital business and get into something else. Well, everybody is into education right now. So we're in the terrible position of asking, how can we perpetuate and preserve ourselves, instead of maybe we just ought to get out of the business altogether and go into something else that isn't being done. That's one of the things I keep thinking. I also keep thinking right now that if I were going to really invest church money in education, I wouldn't put it into educational buildings for parishes. And I think that's the wrong place to put it. Sunday schools started out as a way of teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic to kids who worked in the factories and the mines all week. That's how they started. I mean, what they have become now is a travesty, I think, and the money that we put into Sunday schools really ought to be saved. And the other place where I think we're misspending our money is at the higher education level. If I were going to invest money in church-supported institutions today, I'd put them into junior and senior high schools. Because that's the time at which I think the churches ought to run the institutions that are doing the educating. Grade schools are still a time when parental values are dominant, not the school. And colleges are I think, at a point where you really need to inject the religious dimension in other ways than by operating your own church institution.
The Lutherans ought to buy out all the Catholic high schools and grade schools.
Not bad. Not bad. Not bad. All right.
They're getting out of it.
Okay, but at any rate, why do we still have church-related colleges outside of the fact that we always have had them? I mean, we started them and there's some sort of perpetual motion that keeps them going. It's probably because the religious dimension in its academic form is simply not present at most state institutions. And I think it's really a travesty that at the University of Wisconsin you can study every religion but Christianity, because that would be mixing church and state. But that's where it belongs. It belongs in the publicly supported institutions with responsible chairs of academic theology that are interacting with everything else. And I could give a long reason for that. But I keep thinking that until we get to the point where the state schools, state tax-supported schools, are willing to have responsible departments of theology as they have everything else, students who go there are going to be culturally deprived. Whole dimensions of their existence are not going to be dealt with academically. And so the church college has a role by default, because it's one of the places still where theology can potentially interact with everything else. But if we did it the way we were supposed to, let us be sure of the fact that the financial sources of support would tend to dry up. And that's the dilemma we're in. We got to sell our souls in order to stay alive, and I think that's cruddy.
I'm not sure we do. That's where I'd like to hear from you people.
I think that there are relatively few Lutheran colleges in relation to Lutheran parishes in this country. And even if your premise is true, that the money ought to be spent at the secondary education level, there's still clearly a role for the number of schools, or perhaps a slightly smaller number of schools, as exists now. The fault, I think, lies in the individual parishes who, if your statistics are right, aren't supporting what theoretically, and what the ministers and pastors all will tell you, is a wonderful idea: church education. And the fault lies either in the communication from the colleges, or perhaps it lies in the parish structure, because for the few schools that exist, the idea that they can't get adequate support to make up the difference from the parishes is appalling. Minnesota may not be that way, but Minnesota probably has the largest percentage of Lutherans as a state in the country. And I think you're right that money ought to be spent at the secondary level rather than proliferating a dying phenomenon in this country, which is parochial grammar schools. The Catholics are getting out of the business, as you said. The Lutherans are getting into it. At least they are in Chicago. And I think, though, that both points are well taken, that something's got to be done to the Lutheran Church to jog it to decide whether the individual parishes care about the schools that have been good schools up till now. If they don't, maybe the system ought to die, because the support ought to come out of the whole constituency. The word constituency was used throughout earlier, and the constituency, which should be the whole church, isn't supporting the organization.
It's really interesting. I agree with what you're saying about people selling the notion of the Christian school. I've seen more literature come out in the last year from different schools that are pushing their church relatedness and the fact that they're church college. It just absolutely surprises me, it appalls me, because these are schools that have, maybe 50 years ago had some sort of relationship with the church, but all of a sudden they're discovering that it's a very marketable thing now to be espousing some sort of church values. And they look at, in our part of the country, Bethel College. You think St. Olaf closed down their admissions middle of winter. Bethel closes down about late December. It's Baptist, and people are flocking to Bethel College, Oral Roberts University. You know, Oral Roberts has no problem with students at all. So it's not. It's very frustrating to see a number of private schools all of a sudden rediscovering. And I'm speaking very cynically, and I should apologize for that. But it does cause a lot of people to suspect, you know, this notion of the relationship of the church to the college.
Well, that's happening because of what, declining enrollment,
sure,
and the kind of hokey obsession with the roots. Fed at this point, don't you think? That it, you know, coming from both ends, that that's one of the reasons why they're doing that.
Why can't theology be the academic center of a church college?
What department do you teach in, Carl? Are you in the religion department at the Capitol?
Yeah.
I wish you were a mathematician, because if that question had come from a mathematician, it would be more significant, because you've got vested interest.
So that's true, but you know, I think it still needs answering.
Yeah.
It's a good point if it's comparative. If it is the way it taught, the way it should be, to compare different religious disciplines and different attitudes, it's as good a liberal arts tool as any other discipline, be it English or history. Certainly you could make an argument that the history of Western civilization is a series of religious warfare or religious strife. So if you can, you certainly ought to be able to make theology or the study of religion in the Western civilization the center of a liberal arts college.
No, but again, Walt's point was that the kind of theology Carl was talking about would simply drive away the dollar.
That's okay. You know, you're either going to sell a good product that's true to the position, or you're going to not be there. There's no reason just to be there, is one of Carl's point.
If it dies for a good reason, it seems to me it's served its function.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an academic core to it, and you know, being in school means being about academics.
Right.
And so that has to be there, I think. You know, on an academic level, wrestling with the content. I don't think there needs to be an either or between what you're talking about, but I don't think the one can do without the other, and I really think there needs to be a systematic coming to grips with the academic, which has been systematically cut down. But I don't think it has to be either one or the other, either in lifestyle or in study.
What do you mean systematically cut down?
I think all of our church schools have lessened their religion requirements.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of interesting. At our school, every college must go through a curriculum upheaval about every 10 years. But we had our bloodletting 10 years ago. And at that time, the religion requirement was lessened. But the religion department has done a study. Every student must take a minimum of one course. And they discovered that 80% of the students take two courses. About 60% take three religion courses. And then a smaller percentage are taking four or more. So, yes, you can say that in many colleges the religion requirement is going down, but it doesn't necessarily follow that there are fewer students studying religion. Like, once again, in our particular school, the religion department has to be one of the larger departments in the institution, with a fairly sizable number of people majoring in that. And it's a very academically oriented religion department.
Will we move from an LCA college that's over 100 years older than the one we're at right now, So our problems are altogether unique to what you people are talking about right now. We have no alumni to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
We're less than 20 years old. So we have to depend upon our churches. And we just knock ourselves out trying to serve our churches in a way that they will want to support us. We've saved our fiscal necks, you might say, by spreading out into graduate courses, MBA degrees in
continuing education.
Continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
And that our continuing education is really supporting our college.
Mm-hmm.
We have many times more students in continuing education than we do in the regular undergraduate on campus. And we, in continuing education, it's the main areas are education, teacher education, and business administration,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jurisdiction of justice. We give master's degrees to the practically the whole LA police force because we're the only ones who are giving this this degree,
mm-hmm.
And we're, like Walt said, we've had to go into things that nobody else was doing just to stay afloat.
Well, see, this goes back to your point of where are the parishes in helping to save California Lutheran? Where are the parishes? Where are the California Lutherans and whatever other synods support or district support, because that's dual support at CLC. Where are the Lutherans? Do they really have an interest?
I think they are doing a remarkable job, but is that not enough?
Yeah. There's got to be millions of Lutherans in the western part of the United States.
Comment on that?
Well, California. An even more critical area in terms of education is the one that, how are we going to finance theological education? I know that's not the subject tonight, but you're asking where are the churches, where are the parishes? That same demand is there in terms of theological education. Our seminaries have a very poor group of alumni. Not a lot of bad cats who are graduates there. When you come from that perspective, and you have a hard time getting foundation money, government money is absolutely out. And it still comes back to the we're begging for more money from that end, out of parishes. Ultimately, we're going to get back to a whole question of stewardship.
Yeah. Is that now siphoning off interest and funds that would possibly have gone to the
I think you can
colleges?
See that there's been a more dramatic increase in support of seminaries proportionately than there has been for colleges.
Yeah. Well, it is 10 o'clock. I think we should have a brief recess.